a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
All right, what's going on, everybody? We did another Facebook Live interview today, and that is going to be available. Well, I guess it's going to be right here, right now. But in the beginning, of course, I want to get all of the announcements out of the way. Announcement number one is we are going to be doing a little bit different of a thing going forward with the Patreon of the podcast. And I guess with that being said, let me give a huge shout out to Dennis Sousy. And in fact, I think I met you last weekend, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure we hung out a little while in Florida. Really super nice guy. And you did say when you were down there that you were going to find a way to try to support me a little bit more with the podcast. So you said it. You backed it up. I appreciate it very much. Thank you very much for being part of the Patreon. And for everybody else, I am starting up my free Monday night lessons again, which means that I am going to be streaming those for free to all of the Patreons. So if you've been looking to get some coaching into your routine, this might be a good option for you. I am going to be starting that up again in, I guess, 3 days. It's going to be this coming Monday. So if you are ever been interested in getting those, being able to check those things out, that is a good way to do so. And we are also going to try to make it a little bit more enticing for you to join the Patreon system. We are going to be doing all of these live streams, and we are actually going to make it so that if you are a certain tier of the Patreons, that you're actually going to get to start participating in these in a limited role, whether it's asking some of the players or promoters some questions, or whether it's just kind of getting in there and meeting the people before or after the stream. You can actually meet some of your heroes. So, for example, I'm actually doing an interview tomorrow with Allison Fisher. Theoretically, in the future, if you were part of the Patreon system at a high enough tier, you would be able to join before or after the start of that interview and actually get to meet them and interact with them for just a couple minutes before we get started, because of course the players are very busy and they have time schedules and stuff like that. But you'll actually get to meet some of your heroes, which will be pretty cool. And on top of that, we're going to open up some of the raw, unedited audio and video that we're going to be doing. So, of course, we do a little bit of editing onto our shows, and you're going to get the raw audio. Man, I'm really bad at talking today, and I'm not going to edit any of this, so this is going to sound just completely silly. But you're going to get some of that raw audio so you can actually hear a little bit of how the players interact with when it's not actually part of the interview. So you can hear how they talk to me, how they talk to anybody else on the stream, and you can kind of get a better idea of who they are as an actual person. We are doing all these things with the Patreon system to try to entice more people to join it and become part of it. That is because, to be honest, this is kind of my job now. And because it's my job now, I need to start kind of treating it as my job. So I need to kind of be more serious about it. So the best way to become serious about it is to try to get people involved with the financial side of things so that I can actually support some of the projects going in the future. And I was told that if I'm ever going to do anything in this industry as far as like long term, that this is something that I'm going to have to do. So I'm taking that advice finally, and I am going to try to make it a little bit more serious. So if you've ever been a Patreon in the past or you'd like to be one going forward, please check out the video, or I guess the wherever you're getting this from, the description of the video, and it'll have how you can actually become interested or become part of the Patreon system, and you're going to get a lot of really cool things with it. I guess with that, please give some thought into that. And that's really the only introduction I have in the beginning, so without further ado, I guess let's jump right into the live Facebook.
It's possible it works. Who knows if it'll actually work? There's a chance. Did it work? I don't know if it works.
You can give it a try.
I figured if I just keep saying, is it working, over and over again, maybe it will. But who actually knows? Let's see.
Stop it. Go okay. Live.
Hey, it actually is working. Yes! I love this game.
Woohoo!
I love it when this works. So, we're here. Hi, everybody. As you can see, we have Margaret Fifalova. We have Yana Holiday. Hey. We have Mike Howerton doing his accounting work. Oh, there's a wave. And we have me. Hi. We're here to talk about the World Cup of Pool. How much fun is that going to be? I think it's going to be fun. Margaret, this, yes. Well, you and Yana, this was your first ever Matchroom event as well as your first ever World Cup of Pool. What'd you think? What are your takeaways?
To be honest, it was really, really exciting. Like, I was super nervous in the beginning. When I was out in the venue, I was telling Yana, I'm shaking. I don't know how it's going to go. So, you know, like, it's just so different compared to everything we've done before and pressure. And even when you're out there on the venue watching matches in real life, just, like, be there. And then when you are actually playing, it's not even comparable. Like, you have to use all possible tricks to keep yourself calmed, and it's not gonna work until, like, you probably, I think Yana's is not gonna let me lie, after we win the first rack, I think we calmed down a little bit, but before it was so stressful. We were shaken, really.
And Yana, What do you think? Yeah. How'd it go?
Yeah, it was really great to play on this event and to experience this big stage. And yeah, when we was watching matches, it was like still okay. You don't think it's so much pressure. But when you sit on this chair next to the table, yeah, that hits you. You start to feel it and it's like, yeah, but it was amazing feelings. I don't even know how to describe it, like, I played a lot of events before in, like, big stages, but this one, it's absolutely different. And it's very cool that me and Margaret are the first one to represent Belarus at this event. It's like, you feel honored and, like, grateful for this opportunity.
Well, that is one thing I did. You were the first ever Belarusian team?
Yes. Belarus didn't take part in World Cup of Pool before.
Whoa, I had no idea that that was a real thing.
We had just a little bit of pressure on our shoulders. Just
smaller. Yeah, so Margaret, what did that mean to you? I didn't realize that was a thing. What is knowing that, what does that mean for you?
Honestly, like, I couldn't have wished for a better partner to represent my country on the first ever World Cup of Pool, because I think we worked so well with Yana together. Just the chemistry that we had in the beginning. We supported each other so much, like, from the beginning. We kind of teamed up to make the visa process and to go through everything we went through just to get here. And then, like, once we got here, it was such a relief already that we've done it, you know. And then we're so excited to play the first match. We had this, like, good butterflies. And I don't know, it really meant a lot for me. It's like something very, very special. I can't even describe it, you know, I have no words. It's something completely different. Like, this arena is so incredible. Like, I've never seen something like that before in my life. Even though there were no spectators, but it was something unbelievable.
Well, yeah, so that, I think that's an interesting thing too, that maybe most people didn't actually know. Yana, we'll ask you this question. When did you actually get the call saying that you were going to be representing Belarus in the World Cup of Pool?
Oh, it was, I think, like, 1 week before we need to fly. So in the beginning of May. So, yeah, we needed to rush and get a visa for 5 days. And then Margaret received her visa and we need to fly on the next day. So it was, like, crazy and, like, yeah, I still remember. I'm sitting home in the evening and we're discussing with Richard how he can go to the World Cup of Pool. And then Margaret is calling. She's like, I have some news for you. Like, and I was like, wow. I was like speechless. I was sitting and I was like, what's happening? Like, how it is even possible?
Yeah, but I was like, yeah, do you want to play World Cup of Pool?
And I was like, what?
Sure, I guess I got nothing going on. Yeah. Why not, you know?
Yeah, and then we started to find out the information how to get visa on time, because yeah, we don't really have embassy, but they ship our passports to Russia, and yeah, it's a very long and a bit difficult process, but we managed to do it on time.
Yeah, as Jana said, I got my visa basically 20 hours before our flight on Friday. It's crazy.
Like, yeah, she got it on Thursday and we fly on Friday morning, so it's like...
That's, I mean, that's pretty incredible, right? I mean, it's got to be so hard going into an event playing when you basically found out you were playing within basically hours of actually hitting the first ball.
Yeah, we found out about like 10 days before, I would say. Maybe 2 weeks. Yeah, I guess it was 2 weeks.
Yeah, like 2 weeks.
And then it was like weekends and some national holidays, so embassy was closed. We were just collecting documents and stuff. But then as soon as we had a chance to get together and start practicing, I think we did a really, really good job. Like the best we can do regarding preparation in such a short term. And I think we did really, really well.
Yep.
So, yeah, Mike, I agree with Margaret.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Mike, do you have any questions you want to throw on?
I'm curious about the procedure that was involved in dealing with the virus, on you guys having to come over and staying with inside the bubble and that sort of thing. I mean, how did that whole thing work out?
You want to answer, Jana? Or?
Yeah, you can say, or I can say, it doesn't matter.
Okay. All right. So first of all, I would say that it's very strict in UK. So basically getting here was pretty complicated because you have to fill up the passenger locator form and they basically tracking you through like every step you're going through. And the government is giving you a call every day and they're asking you, can you confirm that you are isolating, that you are quarantining, because like you're supposed to. And the matchroom is doing a very, very great job. Like they're giving us a very strong like invitation letter that we are allied athletes. By traveling to international tournaments. And honestly, I didn't know what to expect from being in a bubble, but like I would say that we feel very safe and secure here. We are not allowed to leave the hotel, but you know, we have everything we need in here and it's very nice. It's very fun bubble. We have all floor, like the third floor of the hotel for the players. And matchroom stuff, and you know, there's a lot of things to do here. I didn't expect that, but it turned out being pretty good. And we got tested as soon as we arrived, and then we were tested on the second or third day, I believe, right?
Yeah, it was a second day testing and then day 8 testing. So matchroom is organizing everything for you, and that's like really great because you don't need to worry about anything.
Yeah,
and then if you have some problems, yeah, you just go to them and they really help you a lot.
Yeah, exactly. So basically they have people responsible for everything. So whatever you need, you just go out and ask. It's very convenient. Everything is so well organized. And yeah, you don't have to worry about anything. Just have to chill and play and show your best game.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Mike, do you have a follow-up or anything?
Well, I'm kind of curious. I think it was last week they announced the first Eurotour event. So what's your feeling, you know, coming into that? That's going to be something different than Matchroom. I mean, certainly a whole lot more players. What are your feelings with that coming up? I assume you're playing.
Yeah, I think we will try to play. If there will be also bad restrictions to travel to Austria, because, yeah, who knows? And as I know now, it's not allowed to play men Eurotour and women, so we can only compete in women division. So, yeah, it will be nice to see everyone again because you kind of miss everyone because last tournament was like 1 year and a half ago.
Yeah,
so it will be just great to compete.
I believe the last Eurotour we've played was February 2020. So
yeah.
It's been a long time ago. Honestly, it's a shame that it's not allowed to play in men division because I really, really enjoyed playing in men Eurotours the last couple of times. And I actually managed to take 17th place the last time I played men Eurotours. It was a very, very good result for me. And I think it gives you a very good push forward in order to like self-development as a player to come to be able to compete against men. But I understand where it comes from. Like, they want to have minimum amount of players in the venue, so this is why they don't allow to kind of have conflict in men and women division, because usually men start on Thursday and they play Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and women Eurotour starts on Saturday.
Yeah, and you've had some pretty good success on the Eurotour. How many of those have you won?
I won 2 Eurotours, and I've got so many second places, like 7 or 8, I believe, and a couple of thirds as well.
Look at this. We get a bonus. We get a bonus interview.
Yeah, we get a Richard.
Hello, oh, Richard.
There we go.
Hello.
Yeah, he also got a lot of troubles coming to World Cup of Pool because he should have played with Vincent, but Vincent is now in Belarus staying with our cat. So, yeah.
And we have another player who's joining us in right now, Wojtek.
Hi, can you hear me, guys?
Yes, we can. How's it going?
It's all right. I mean, regarding the cat part, there is no one that understands it better than you, right?
Oh, yeah.
Don't. For yours.
I would do anything for my cats. Wojtek, so we'll get you in here quick. We're just talking about the Euro Tour, and I guess that's just been announced in September. That sounds like something you'll be involved in as well?
Euro Tour in September, there's going to be one in June as well, right?
Oh, is there one in June as well?
September.
Yes, in June.
In June.
Oh, it's in June.
In Sankt Johann. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably the prettiest venue ever. I mean, I don't mean really the venue where the tables are, but all the surroundings are just amazing. My favorite spot, to be honest, that I have ever visited playing pool.
So you'll be involved in that one as well?
Yeah, that's for sure. I have already signed up.
Yep. So we had talked a little bit earlier about our takeaways from the World Cup of Pool. This was your, if I'm not mistaken, your second time, right? The first time that you played in it, you were a finalist.
Close. That was my fourth appearance.
That was close enough. I don't pay attention. So tell us about your takeaways from the World Cup.
Well, probably I was a little bit late, so everything I'm about to say has already been said. But my takeaways, actually, what I'm surprised is that I played only 10 racks, basically, and won 3 of them with my partner. But it feels like it was really a valuable experience for your career, for your development. I really do believe it. Also, because it's been a long time since I played on a big stage. And that's why, even in this short period of time, you feel like you can really know yourself better. And despite your weaknesses, is just like another 100 hours of practice at your table. It really means a lot. And I could basically go into details talking about every ball I played, because there were only several shots in the whole tournament. But basically, this is my biggest takeaway, that playing under this pressure, is what develops you the most.
Yeah. All right. So Jana, we'll ask you a question now. So this is, of course, your first. This is your first ever Matchroom event, and it's your first ever World Cup of Pool. What are you taking away to help better your game in the future?
Oh, it's a difficult question. I don't know. This experience just was amazing, and I know that I need to improve my break. That was very difficult to break on this event with a wooden rack, because normally we practice to break with a magic rack. So yeah, I'm going to practice for sure. And then, yeah, I remember all my mistakes and I'm going to work on it, because yeah, it happens.
Yeah. And Margaret, same question.
Obviously, as Jana said, we have to work on the break, because it was a turning point in the match, in my opinion. If we would have a better break, we would have so much more chances. And I remember all shots that I missed. Basically, it was long shots. Cue ball is so close to the rail, and I know that I have to work on it. Like, I already wrote everything down, I'm going to put hours of hours of repetition and I'll get it done for the World Championship.
Yeah. And Wojciech?
Jump in regarding the break. I get an impression that some players really underestimate how important the break shot was in this tournament. They are like, many players are like, if it's racked by a referee, you cannot really check the rack. It's like, you cannot really predict anything about the rack. It's not true, actually. You could really see that the percentage just worked there, and the players that hit the rack very square and powerfully got a better effect. I could see that in many matches. For example, in our match that we unfortunately lost, the break was very much in our favor. And during the practice, I have never seen Kuwait actually practicing their break, and it was their only weakness. If they have lost this match, it will be because of that.
Yeah. So, Mike, you have any questions?
No, I'm going to let you go on that one.
All right. So if anybody out there in the comments has any questions for any of these three players, feel free to jump in right now. I will ask another question to Jana. How is it that no matter what's happening in your matches, you're always smiling?
I'm just always positive. Like, why you want to think about how you missed when you can just forget about it, let it go, and then focus on the next shot? Like, you think about it later when you're done with your match and when you're practicing. Yeah, during the match, I'm just trying to stay positive and focus on the good things.
So when you leave the pool table, do you just, like, frown for the next 12 hours in a row?
What is frown?
Your American words, Nate.
Sad face. Sad face.
Oh, no, it's... I don't know. I just think that when it comes to the game, I'm quite positive. And yeah, even if I'm saying something not really negative, I'm still smiling. So then it doesn't sound so bad.
Certainly.
That's true. I can relate.
Yeah.
Why frown if you're living the dream?
Yeah.
Exactly. Here's the thing. Like, of course, we made mistakes, but that was such a great experience. And we really enjoyed being there. We were so happy just to be there. And it's just, you got to be grateful. Like, sometimes you see a lot of players out there, even new teams, and they just have this attitude. They're so upset. And of course, they're sad about their performance. But sometimes it feels like people don't really enjoy the process. And I feel like we really did. We really enjoyed the process, and we were just so grateful for the opportunity to be there. And we enjoyed every single moment, and it's beautiful. It's amazing. That's all I can say.
Yeah. So,
this is what actually made you close to win, in my opinion. It was actually enjoyable to watch two of you. I mean, you were both, as you said, it was clear that you girls are enjoying the match. But you were also focused. You kept on pushing. You really believed in the final success. That was nice. And this is the way to go.
Right. Yeah, we did. When we were up 4-3, I was like, okay, we really have some chances.
Wojciech, how was your pizza?
Nate, well, what kind of question is that?
Oh, he must be really hungry. I mean, yeah, that was perfect. That was like a traditional Italian one with mortadella and with pistachio pesto. Fancy, isn't it?
Wojciech, I just actually realized that
you're
already back home. To be honest, I saw that you're here, and I was like, why it's sunny over there and it's raining right here? I was so confused. And I just realized that you flew back home already.
Yeah, that's true. I'm actually in a beautiful place. But it's a city center by the river. So everything
is
perfect.
Oh, it looks amazing.
There was a guy playing a saxophone. So the only thing I needed in my life right now was Nate Windham.
You know what my favorite part about that was, Wojciech? You pronounced my last name wrong, so now I just feel like I'm absolved for all of the times I pronounced your name wrong, all 4,000 of them.
Oh, that was Mindham then?
Oh, Mindham.
Mindum. Okay.
But keep getting it wrong. It makes me feel a lot better, please.
All right. This is the way I call you. If I want to call you Teddy Bear, I will call you Teddy Bear.
Oh, that's sweet.
You can't argue with the love. You just, I'm blushing right now. Oh my goodness. Wow, Mike, take over. I'm over here blushing. Ask a question. Oh my goodness.
Yana and Margaret, you had talked about having like 2 weeks prior, to get ready for this event. Had you played Scotch Doubles before? I mean, have you played it together, and is it something that you play much over there?
We didn't play together before. We took part in European team championship, but it was different format. Like, I need to play one match and Margaret playing like a different opponent, different match. So we never really played Scotch Doubles, so it was kind of new for us. But yeah, we was preparing all this time before tournament, and we had Richard and Vincent who was playing against us in the Scotch Doubles. So I think it helped a lot. And like, yeah, Margaret is very good in position games, so she was helping me a lot, like how I should play this ball or how I should play position. So yeah, I think we found this connection and understanding.
Yeah, I agree. I think we found a really good balance between, keeping things simple, as as we can, because on this TV table, under this pressure, you really can't afford doing some complicated and crazy shots with lots of side spin. And I think in the practice, we really found this connection. We figure out some shots that Yana and I are not comfortable with shooting, so we decided that we're not going to leave each other the position for this kind of shots. And we basically figure out that we don't really need to communicate and talk during the match, because she's doing it her way and I'm doing it my way, and it's different. So I can't really give her advice because she sees the position and table differently because she's a snooker player, right? So we just, did it on our own way. And the only moment when we really have to communicate and talk is like push out situation or safety, kick shot, little things like this. But yeah, I think we just really did so well in such a short notice and prepare as best as we can.
So let me expand upon that, kind of what you just said there, Margaret. So we're seeing Darren and Carl make a run in this event. I think it's a pretty huge surprise to a lot of people, only because, Carl's barely played pool for 4 years. Maybe he's played a little bit more than he's saying he's played, but regardless, he said he hasn't really played much pool. And Darren is, he's been fishing a lot. So the idea is, they're crediting their ability to do well in this event because of their communication, because of their kind of like almost psychopathic connection to each other. How do you strike the balance between those two things? And how do you think that it might be able to help you in the future if you and Yana were to play together again?
Honestly, I think we just have to practice as much as we can together and, just like get used to each other's style. And I think if next time, for example, if we get invited, we'll have so much more time to prepare, and I think the result could be so much different. And about Darren and Carl, I honestly think that they practice much more than they say, in my opinion, because I was watching them playing and there is no way they were not practicing all this time, honestly. I don't believe that. I just think that in tournaments like this, sometimes experience is more important than hours you put in, because like those two can handle the pressure so well, and that's what matters the most when you're playing on TV arena.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. They have to be playing more. Nobody's that good when you take 4 years off, right? Carl's hitting them pretty good. So I guess, Yana, we'll start with you on this one. What's next on the radar for you with your career? What are your next events coming up? Oop, she's just switching her camera. Are you able to hear us?
Yeah, sorry. Just I was on my laptop, but I forgot that there is a different chargers, and it just died.
No problem. So did you hear the question?
No, I did not.
Okay. So what's next on the radar for you in the coming weeks and months as far as your career? What are you next looking forward to for the next few events?
I'm thinking to play the World Championship that will be in June. I got an invitation, but I still don't know if I will manage to play. So I really hope it will happen. And if not, then Eurotour will be a next event that I'm going to take part in.
Perfect. And Margaret?
As well, the World Championship in June is the first event. I already started to prepare for it. And the second is going to be Eurotour in St. Johann in June.
Gotcha.
I'm just really excited for tournaments to finally get started.
Yeah. Definitely. And when are you going to be making it over to the States again? Do you have any idea?
Nope, not yet. Probably August. We will see. It's really hard to predict right now because embassy is closed, so I basically can't even get the interview, and all this situation is a little bit weird. But as soon as everything is opening up, I'll be able to get there.
Gotcha. And Wojtek, what about you? I know we talked a little bit already, but any other events on the radar?
Well, no, when it comes to tournaments, it's basically the same. June is... the World Championships is definitely the most important event of the year. But out of my plans, I would also point out I really want to still keep on professionalizing my preparations to the season that is coming. I'm doing it gradually, I would say. I put a lot of hours, but now I want to do it like in a smarter way, I think. So even though...
Did you mute yourself?
Did more than that.
Bye, Wojtek. Miss you already. He might come back. Who knows? Mike, do you have any other questions?
Margaret and Jana, you were talking about how, you know, the two events that you've got coming up in a typical year that's not COVID related. How many tournaments do you play and how much time do you spend on the road?
Okay, for me, it's usually 5-6 tournaments in China per year, then 5 Eurotours, World Championship, and I would say maybe 4 national tournaments. So basically, before COVID hit, I was at home maximum for 2 weeks straight, and then I was traveling almost during all the year. It was like my schedule was really crazy. My parents almost didn't see me through all year. But I really enjoy this lifestyle. You know, I love doing that.
And Jana?
Yeah, it's the same for me. Like, I was home for like a few weeks and then flying again. But for me, it was not only pool events, it was a snooker events as well. So, yeah, it was like a lot of events. But we all miss this traveling and tournaments. And hopefully soon it will be back to normal.
Okay, so before we move on to Wojtek, if you had the World Championships in snooker and the World Championships in pool on the same weekend and you could only play one, which would you play?
I think I would play pool event now. I prefer it more than a snooker one. But before I got some situation when European Snooker Championship and European Pool Championship was like right after each other, and I managed to play both of them. So I always prefer if you can like play all the events as that is possible.
Of course. So you grew up playing you grew up playing snooker. So why are you switched over to the point where you like pool now or more now?
I don't know, because in snooker it's not so many events now. So it's only like 2 European Championship and 1 World Championship, and we don't really have national events. So, but in pool it's a lot of tournaments, like in China, Eurotours, European Championship. So you can travel a lot, play a lot, and I actually start to enjoy this game a lot now. I still miss snooker, but pool is very entertaining and very quick compared to snooker game.
So, Wojtek, did we lost you there. Did you want to expand upon your answer?
Yeah, because we're asking about our plans for the near future. So I just wanted to say that I feel like I'm putting a lot of hours, really, because I just love the sport. And I will be prepared for the World Championships in a good way. But I think there are also some steps that need to be taken in order to become a world-class player quicker and eventually to get there at all. So this is also my plan. I will try to put more effort into this.
Gotcha. And then Mike Howerton asked the question to the ladies when you were gone. What did your year look like before COVID? So like how the standard week, how much time do you spend traveling throughout the year?
Before COVID?
Yeah.
I actually have an Excel file in my computer. So I count all the tournaments and I calculate all the costs and earnings. So it was always like around 25 international events a year, and plus some Bundesliga sometimes and sometimes some Polish league. So if you have like 56 weekends a year, I think like more than 30 were occupied.
Wow. All right, Mike, anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you three joining. You guys can book out if you would like. If you want to hang around and chat with us still, you can, but you certainly do not have to.
Thank you very much. I'll just enjoy the last day of nice weather. So thank you very much for having me. It was very nice to see all of you. Safe travels home, back home, girls. And,
thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, Margaret. Yana, whenever you're able to get home, it sounds like sounds like you're going to be struggling to get home. Did you want to talk about that?
Yes, I received the email that I was a contact of someone who got coronavirus on a flight. So they tell me that I need to stay 10 days quarantine and I cannot leave the country before 18th. So it will be very interesting for me and I hope we can manage and fly back home. But yeah, right now it looks like we're stuck in England till 19th.
Ugh, yucky.
Yeah, but at least Richard is with me, so I'm not alone.
That makes it a little bit easier when you have some company, I suppose, right?
Yeah. And as I know, there will be a table after the tournament so we can practice and prepare for the World Championship.
Well, perfect. Yeah, it works out nicely then. And all right. Well, if like I said, if you guys want to get booking out, you can. If you want to hang around to talk to us, you're certainly welcome to. But I suppose I probably should have asked you guys this before. feel free. Mike and I are going to continue talking a little bit of pool. So do whatever you would like to do.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting. It was very nice to talk with you all.
Yep. Yep. Thank you so much for joining us. It was
a
pleasure.
Have a nice day, everyone. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye, Wojtek. Bye, Margaret, and bye, Jana.
Bye.
Thank you all for joining us.
Bye.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
I just need to find out how to turn it off.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just do this. Okay, bye.
All right.
Haha, Mike, you can't get rid of me. You can't get rid of me yet. We're going to talk some more pool. And it's possible Kelly Fisher will be joining us at some point in time. I'm not totally sure as to when or if she's going to. But, we still got a little bit more to talk about because while the World Cup of Pool is down to its final few players, and actually I should probably pull that up, they're down to six. And there's another session that begins, I believe, in 18 minutes. So we could probably get this finished up before then so that we can – I personally want to go back over and watch it as well. So we have some huge shocks, right? I mean, we expected maybe a couple of the teams that are here, but I don't think that if you'd have polled a lot of people that you'd have thought that Great Britain C would have been there at the start of the tournament or Slovakia. Slovakia beat Japan, the Czech Republic, and they actually knocked out Austria to begin the tournament. I mean, that's a huge surprise, right? And on the other side, you have Denmark and Germany and the Philippines and Estonia. The Estonia one's a little bit of a shocker maybe, but I'm telling you what, Dennis Grabe is that guy is a real player. And then Denmark, you know, you would probably suspect Spain out of that little quarter, but
I don't think that Denmark is a huge surprise. What do you think of the tournament looking at it as a whole?
You know, it's hard to pick a favorite now. It's hard to pick a team that I think is going to win.
It's very easy for me.
I certainly have a team that I want to win.
It's very easy for. In fact, I know that our other. I will give a shout out to the Booth brothers. They do their lock of the week. My lock of the week is that Carl and Darren are winning this tournament. They're winning it. They are. Everybody. They are winning this tournament.
It goes back to what you were talking about with Jana. It doesn't feel like they went into this thing with, I'm going to win this. You know, they didn't. 4 or 5 years ago, they would have gone into an event like this with a different attitude. But now, you know, I think they're enjoying themselves and playing the game for a different reason. I mean, don't get me wrong, they want to win, sure. But it just feels like a different mentality with them. And I think it's great. Now, you know, look at the question that Mike Pinoza asked online. You know, is it good for pool if they win it? So that, you know, that's a whole other question.
Well, that and let's talk about that because I think that is an interesting question. But I think experience comes into when I was watching their first match and I was watching both Carl and Darren just dog ball after ball after ball and just could not get into a flow of anything. And South Africa was also, you know, really struggling to get into a rhythm. And so they ended up winning at 7-5. You know, look at who they've beaten now. Greece, I mean, Nick Malai and Alex Kazakis. I mean, that was a lot of people's favorites after the opening round when you saw Austria fall and Spain fall. That was a lot of people's pick at that point. They went out there in pretty convincing fashion and won 7-4, and then they beat a Netherlands team 9-1. I mean, Niels Fein and Mark Biesterbosch, I mean, that is an incredible team to beat. They are on a run. And now to answer your question, is this bad for pool? It gets people talking about it. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody knows that this is trying to be as respectful as possible to the event. It's a bit of a trick tournament, right? I mean, it's a race to 7, winner break in the first two rounds and then a race to 9. It's basically a fun event. At the end of the day, this is a fun event and it's incredibly entertaining and it's a must watch. It is an absolute must watch. And if they win this, you're going to have people talking no one's going to question whether or not Carl and Darren are the best in the world right now, but they put together a magical run. Why is that? I just don't see why that's a bad thing. I think it's a really cool thing for the sport.
You know, when you say it's must watch, have you been to a pool room since the event got started?
Oh yeah.
I was at,
oh wait, I no, I haven't.
Okay.
No, not since the event started.
Last night, God, let's see, probably 16, 80 players. It was a league night. And you couldn't walk up to anyone and say, what was Jason thinking? Without them immediately knowing what you were talking about. And like somebody had joked online, you know, how many people haven't set that shot up? But it amazed me that many people had watched it. And I mean, maybe they had just seen highlights and yeah, Matchroom shared that match, so it was available for free. But
yeah.
But still, you're right. I mean, everybody was watching. Everybody is tuned into this event.
Yeah, I mean, whatever you want to say about Matchroom, I'm in the firm camp of they are revolutionizing this game and for the better. Are they doing it in the best, most optimized way possible? No, you can. I don't think so. I mean, you can nitpick a lot of the things that they're doing. But what you can't nitpick is the impact that they're having on this game. When it comes Moscone Cup time and when it comes World Cup of Pool time, that's it. You follow along. Everybody knows what's happening. You might not be watching it live on DAZN. You might not be watching it live on Sky Sports. But you know what's happening, and you know that it's going on, and you know the twists and the turns. That was not a thing 5, 10 years ago, whatever it was. I mean, it's – you know. The casual player knows. And I think that's a huge step forward.
And speaking of Matchroom, I don't know if you've been in communication with Emily over the last 3 or 4, 4 or 5 days.
No.
It's got to be crazy. I mean, you know what it's like from just getting done running an event that you had ran, which is, you know, a much smaller version of what she's got going. But you know, that's got to be absolutely crazy. And you've got to have people coming in and saying, so-and-so is not going to make it. Oh, crap. And then you're trying to deal with that. Oh, wait, so-and-so is not going to make it. You know, hey, did Carl bring his cues? And
I mean, right.
That, you know, for what they've still accomplished with this event, with the obstacles that she's had in front of her, and I understand she has a team, you know, but the obstacles that they've had put in front of them and the event still going off like it has, you've really got to congratulate them.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. I think that the team that they have in place over there is they're the best chance that we got. At the end of the day, they know what to do. They know how to do it. You know, do we all agree with all of the decisions they make along the way? Maybe not. But the point is they're getting us there. They're getting us there, and we're still moving forward. We're still Matchroom's what we got. So,
well, and now we need something equivalent in the States. We, you know, Matchroom is
the rest of the industry needs to move along with.
Right, right.
Yep.
The rest of the industry needs to step up, and the players need to step up.
Yep. No, I think that's right there is a discussion for another day, and I think it's an interesting one. But you never. I don't think you really answered the question. Do you think Daz and Carl winning is a good thing or a bad thing for the industry?
Oh, I can see both sides of the picture. I'm going to say, I don't know. Does it bring us some attention from outside of the sport? If it does, then it's a good thing because it wouldn't be negative attention.
No, I don't see how this reaches outside the industry. I think if Kelly or Allison made it to the finals or made a deep run that to Carl and Darren are on, I think that brings some outside attention, but I don't think this does because neither one of them are transcendent from the sport really. Maybe Darren is a little bit, but not like Kelly or Allison. I don't think that gets outside attention. Well, now, does it
for you and I?
Gives us something to talk about.
I mean, we're media. We've got something to report on.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, if we're talking about it and people are asking the question, we're engaging. And if we're engaging, it's better than not, right? If Joshua Filler and or maybe let's if Albin and Mario run through again and, you know, they just run through the field and win 3 out of 4, you know, we're talking about are these guys the best doubles pairing in the history of pool? If let's say David Alcaide and Francisco Sanchez Ruiz go through the field, what are we talking about?
It's just expected. Yeah. You know, if they go through the field and win it, you're like, yeah, okay. All right.
There's no storylines really. Right. I mean, there's nothing really to expand upon or talk about. If Carl and Darren go through, we're talking about everything. We're talking about, is Carl going to make a comeback? Is Darren back to where he was? Is, you know, is this a bad look for pool? Is this a good look for pool? I mean, we're talking about so many different storylines and so many different things that bring interest to the game and bring interest to people to talk about these things. I think it's good.
And it's nice to have something different to report on.
Yeah, certainly. So those are the teams that are left, and I'm actually watching live updates. So Denmark and Germany are at 1-1. So if you're tuning into this, don't leave. But it's 1-1. The Philippines are playing Estonia next in the afternoon session, and then tomorrow we have Slovakia and Great Britain C. So give me your prediction. Who do you think is going to win this? I already told you. I think Carl and Darren are going to comfortably win this event. Maybe not comfortably, but they're going to win it.
Well, you know, it's difficult to pick against Germany.
Germany is by far the most, well, I was going to say by far the most talented team left, but I mean, it might be, to be honest, I mean, the Philippines are the most well-rounded team left, right? Germany has the best player left, and I think Estonia is probably the dark horse, because I'm telling you what, Dennis Grabe is not Joshua Filler, but he's not far off. That guy's a great player.
They played great as a team yesterday.
And I can't even remember. Is it Maki or I'm Maji. Blanking on. Yeah, Maji.
Mark.
Yeah. So, and he's, you know, he's playing for his life. If he makes any mistakes, Dennis will kill him.
Yeah, I mean, it. Again, I want to see Great Britain see win. I think Germany's going to win. If I had to pick a second choice, you know, it would be the Philippines. I think that in the second session today, we'll see the winning team playing, because I think it'll be Germany or the Philippines. But again, I would really love to see Darren and Carl win it.
Oh, they're going to. Right here. Good. Hold me accountable. Everybody watching, hold me accountable. Darren and Carl are winning this event. They will.
Okay.
I said it on day one when they were dogging it like crazy. I was talking to Mike Gaines, and Gaines is like, he's kind of reaching on, he's kind of poking the bear at Carl a little bit, like, go back to commentary in a respectful way. Carl's one of actually his favorite player and person in the industry. So he's kind of just picking on him. But I said to him when it was like 2-2 and they both dogged a bunch of balls, I said, I'm telling you what, if Carl and Darren find a way to sneak this match out, they're going to be extremely dangerous in this event. And here they are. I think it's fun.
They've both been under the lights before. They've certainly both played Scotch together. I mean, they've been friends and teammates for how long? So,
yep.
You know, you're going to battle with one of your best buds there. It's just a great story.
Yep. So what, I guess, what else are you watching as far as storylines along this event? And because that's kind of like an opaque question, I will answer it first. I'm watching Roberto Gomez and Roberto Gomez only. The two matchroom events that we've seen him in, trying to be as nice as possible, he dogged it. I mean, he had a world championship by the gonads, and he missed a shot. And then was it 15 years later or 13 years later, whatever it was, in the championship league pool, with a chance to get into the finals. He dogged it, right? So as the tournament gets deeper, the pressure gets higher. I'm watching exactly Roberto Gomez to see how he handles it, to see if he's gotten over his little yips in the biggest moments.
And he seemed to struggle a little bit yesterday.
He finished very strong, but
I don't know if DeLuna got him to calm down or what.
I was going to say, even starting the comeback, he was still struggling in the beginning. And, of course, the comeback was the U.S. is up 5-0 in a race to 7 and lost 7-5, which is another conversation we can have in the future is the trial run maybe of this. Look, at the end of the day, like, you might not like the mullets. You might not. They're marketable. That is absolutely marketable because it makes everybody hate them and love them. So the question becomes, Is this going to continue on if they're not winning? But we can talk about that later on, maybe. So go ahead.
Okay.
Finish your thought up.
I definitely have opinions along those lines. But, yeah, that's a whole another long conversation.
Yep. And we'll give some shout-outs to people in the comments. Thank you, Randy McFarlane, Ian Sitchcon, Eve, of course, Alan Martin, Ed Ladawi, thank you guys for participating in the chat. But did you want to expand upon anything else before we continue on?
Before we finish anything up, I did want to ask: is the Compton Chohan match still on? Are we getting that this week?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. As far as I know, it's still on. I mean, unless something happened very recently. I've been trying to avoid Facebook like crazy because I haven't been watching the World Cup of Pool live. So I'm trying to stay away from spoilers because I'm usually about 6 to 8 hours past when it actually finishes up, when I get caught up. So I'm avoiding it like crazy.
You have no idea what you're missing. As it turns out, every single person who has picked up a cue is a marketing and organizational genius. I wasn't aware.
Yeah,
I mean, the amount of knowledge that has been shared online as to how Matchroom could have done this better. I mean, Emily has just
Emily's an idiot. Clearly, Emily's an idiot. Emily has no idea what she's doing. Matchroom has no idea what they're doing. Clearly,
but she's in heaven now because from now with all this information she's been able to gather this week,
they'll never hire anybody ever again. They'll never hire somebody again. Why would they when they could just go to Facebook and just do something wrong and have the world tell them how dumb they are and how they can do it right?
My God, every single thing. They should have done this. They should have done that. They should have. And how many events have you produced? Well, none. But they should have done this. They should have done that. Oh, my God.
And what's your APA level? Oh, I'm a 2. No, I mean, it's just silly. I mean, there's a difference between.
there's a huge difference between giving a suggestion that you think might work and telling somebody that they're an idiot and have no idea what they're doing because you, I don't know, graduated middle school. I'm not sure what your credentials are that makes you more credible to talk about somebody who does something for a profession. Like, I'm not going to go and tell my doctor that he's doing open heart surgery like an idiot. I'm not going to wake up halfway through and say, you're doing it wrong, you dummy. Do it this way, right? I mean, at some point in time, it's their job. It's what they've trained to do. Let them do it. You're not wrong. You're not, you know.
It's the mentality, though. You know, and I see Ed in the chat, Ed Ladawi. I mean, he deals with the exact same thing. He's got dreams of things that he wants to put together, and he just constantly gets berated on how he could have done it better. Well, if you can do it better, then do it.
That seems to be the easiest thing, right? But yeah, we can move on from that because, I mean, that's just basically us ranting, right? Because it's I get people telling me all the time with the podcast or my events, like, you're doing it wrong. Do it this way. And it's like, okay, fine. Well, let's move on to the Whirlpool Masters, unless there's anything else that you want to talk about with the World Cup.
No.
Okay. So this one I do have one beef with. I do have one beef, and this is a transparency thing, because if anybody watches my events, I'm all about transparency when it comes to this stuff, and I like that they're doing the draws live. I really do like that. That's good. But I do think that we should be able to see the numbers before you do the drawing. So she's drawing balls out. That's fine. And then it'll have, like, number 11, right? And then there's, you know, their number 11 is, all right, number 11 is Nayuki Oi. All right, next one, 14. All right, who's 14? All right, number 14 is Eklund Tkachi, right? I mean, I would love to be able to see a list of the players next to the number so that you can see when a ball's picked out, you already know without them telling us. Does that make sense? Okay, there's a guy there's a guy holding a clipboard. Emily picks a number, and then he says, all right, that person is right here. Right. As far as transparency, I would like to see full transparency. So we know before the drawing even starts who the players are and what their number is. That way it gives the full 100% transparency that this is the way the draw is. Because right now, theoretically, you could have the draw already done. She's drawing numbers for show. And at the end of it, you know, she could be pulling numbers out for show and the draw's already done. And he's basically just reading off the list straight down that they already have. Cause we don't know who the numbers go to. Right.
But see, that's,
it's a conspiracy theory that I saw a lot online. It's not my original idea. It's a lot of conspiracy things that I've seen online. Let me say that. But if you just do that, it takes away all this. And well, I'm sure people still find something to complain about, but I saw a lot of those conspiracy theories that, well, the draw was already done and the numbers are just for show and blah, blah, blah. But it's one way to get rid of it.
The draw was already done. It's a matchroom event.
They can do what they want. At the end of the day,
yeah.
At the end of the day, they can do what they want.
Right. They can put players wherever they want in the brackets.
The only thing I would say to that is if you're gonna make it seem like it's a random draw, then make it a random draw and But at the end of the day, I mean, the event is whatever. And I agree with you completely. If they want to throw Joshua Filler, Fedor Gore, Shane Van Boning, and Jason Shaw all in a little quadrant and let them play against each other and put everybody else, I don't care. It's your event. Do what you want, right? Yeah. I just like the idea that if it's going to be transparent, make it transparent. But that's just a nitpick thing that, again, at the end of the day, I mean, Matchroom is, they're amazing. That's what we got. So they're awesome.
Yeah. I saw somebody post that Matchroom shouldn't be allowed to do whatever it was they were talking about. Like, what do you mean allowed? It's their event. You know, who's going to stop them? The pool police are going to come along and say, all right, Matchroom, thanks for putting all this energy in, but you can't do that.
Yeah, I saw another person that was telling Matchroom, if actually the comment exists on YouTube, he's trying to tell Matchroom that they shouldn't be using the World Cup of Pool to promote the Whirlpool Masters. And telling them that their marketing is stupid. Like, I don't know. Have you ever seen a football game where they don't promote the next game on after that, or what the next event that's, if there's a football game and the Masters is coming up, you think that they're not promoting the that that broadcast, whether it's NBC, whatever it is, they're not promoting the next big event that they have. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
And I would love to see that sort of thing come to the States. And if you could have some kind of cooperation amongst people putting on events, you know, I don't see any reason why streamer A, who is not running an event the following weekend, can't say, hey, everybody, next week, don't forget, I'm not going to be streaming, but Nate's going to be streaming. So make sure you check out this event that he's going to be doing.
Absolutely.
In people's minds and keep it there.
Absolutely. No, I think that's exactly right. I mean, at the end of the day, it's to use an event only for that event is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Strike while the metal's hot.
And it's part of what keeps cool where it is.
Correct. All right. So let's actually take a look at this draw. There's a lot of players here, but I guess I'll just go through the draw. In the first round matches, you have Billy Thorpe versus Skylar Woodward. The winner of that is playing David Al-Qaidi. Going underneath that, you have Kelly Fisher and Justin Sanchez. The winner of that will be playing against Alexander Kazakis. You have Eklanti Kachi versus Petri Mäkinen. Winner of that will be playing Nayuki Oi. Niels Fine versus Jeffrey DeLuna. Winner plays Jason Shaw. Shane Van Boning versus Jakub Konier. Winner plays Fedor. Underneath that, you have Mieszko Fortunski versus Christina Tkach. Winner plays Max Lechner. And then you have Chris Melling versus Sanjid Pelivanovic, who is going to be playing. The winner of that will be playing against Joshua Filler. And then you have Roberto Gomez versus Dennis Grabe. And the winner of that is going to be playing Albin Ocean. So I guess, what are you looking for initially in the first round as far as the matchups that you're kind of looking towards?
You know, when they came out with the PR, they said that Billy and Sky was their marquee match for the first round.
And it has to be.
Well, you know, Nils and DeLuna, I think, is going to be a great one.
Yeah, but it doesn't have the off the table stuff, right? I mean, the off-the-table stuff is why it's the marquee.
And Dennis and Gomez, I think, are going to be good.
Yeah.
If Gomez can get past the yips, he can be, I mean, obviously he can be a world champion, but, you know, think about, and it amazes me the kind of success that he has in some events. Maybe it's just the real marquee under the spotlights thing that he has a problem with, but just think about where his game's going to be if he gets past this. So there's three matches there that I really think are going to be fun.
Well, I mean, Roberto Gomez is not young, right? How much longer do you think he has? I mean, I'm not trying to say he's too old to play pool. I mean, that's the stupidest thing I would ever say if that's the case. But he's got to be maybe 40, 41, 42, something like that.
I'm thinking 40s, but look at Efren. I mean, how long has Efren played?
And Boosty. I mean, Boosty, I think, is a better example because Boosty Every time I say that guy's done, he comes out and snaps a tournament off the next weekend. Warren Kiamko, I mean, look at him. He's tearing up all these regional events right now. He just won a tournament last weekend.
Yeah. And honestly, you know, when we talk about the success that Roberto's having, it's in those regional events. You know, he hasn't seen the success at that higher level, but yeah, if he's going to figure it out, he's got to figure it out soon. And maybe he doesn't. You know, maybe he continues to snap off regional events. I mean, he's having a decent year for a pool player. I mean, he's not bringing home six figures, but he's having a good year.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly.
He's not having the year that Dennis is having again.
Yeah. So, of course, the easy one is Billy and Sky because of the Mullet brothers got to play each other opening round. That's the easiest one. I'm really looking forward to Eklanti Kachi versus Petri. I think that could be a really good, a really great match as well. Of course, Nils and DeLuna, but really, really my eyes are on the quarterfinals with a matchup of Joshua Filler and Albin Ocean. That would be amazing. I think that's the match really that I'm looking forward to. And it's just because their playing styles are so contrasting. You have Albin, the kind of quiet, just working through the table, just kind of like a machine. And then you have Joshua Filler, who has so much emotion. It's crazy. And I think that's really
I think that the winner of this tournament comes out of that match. If it gets there, I think that's the winner of the tournament, personally.
Well, and you've also got a really appetizing Fedor Shane match in the second round, possibly.
Bye-bye, Q-Tech.
Tell me they're not going to be... Tell me the fans aren't going to be all over that match.
Yeah, certainly.
And there's so many different storylines. I mean, you got Melling, who just seems to have success everywhere he goes. Well, maybe not this week, but... He's been around the game forever, and you never... It doesn't feel like going into the match, oh, well, Melling's a favorite to win this, but he's there at the end.
He finds a way to grind. I mean, he's got – I mean, how tough is his draw? I mean, I'm not really sure who his opening round is. I feel like I should know who that is, but I just don't know who that is.
Sanjin, I'm not going to try to do it because I'm sure you're wrong.
Pilovanovich is my guess. Yeah, but yeah, after that, Joshua Filler, theoretically Albin Ocean, probably Fedor or Shane would probably be the winner of that. Maybe. I mean, it's hard to say, right?
Yeah. Well, whoever wins it is going to deserve to have won.
Yeah. So I guess pick your winner. Who do you think is going to win this?
Oh. I hate to say it, and honest to God, I hate to say it, but Joshua Filler.
Okay, I got Kachi. I think Eklanti Kachi is going to win this event. I think he's got the easiest. I think he's got the easiest draw of anybody in the tournament. To the point where I don't think he's even going to have. He might make it to the finals before he has to play somebody who's on the same level as him. Right, well, I mean,
he's got the possibility of Oi. He's got
Oi's the closest. Jason's not really playing much. I mean, don't get me wrong. Jason is Jason, and I'm not trying to disrespect him at all. Jason is Jason, but it's a Jason that hasn't been playing much, right? And he said it himself in the event. I mean, he hasn't been playing much for the last 4 to 8 months because of his pool room. So so let's put it this way. Of the semifinals that are – or the quarterfinals that are going to be playing right around then – the quarterfinals that are going to be playing around then, you might have an Alex Kazakis and a David Al-Kaidi and a Fedor Gorst and a Max Leshner or a Joshua Filler and an Albin Ocean. You know, who do you think Eklanti would rather be playing at that point in time? I'm not – You know, you can make an argument for Kazakis or David Al-Kaidi or Max Leshner.
Yeah, if he had to pick, you know, Max Leshner, you know, Kazakis is another player a little bit like Gomez that has gotten there multiple times and has, you know, he's knocked on the door but not...
I don't like that example because Gomez did it once and it was 13 years in between until he got back there again. I mean, Alex Kazakis he's in the finals or winning things 4, 5, 6 times a year. And Gomez was there once.
Okay.
I mean, Alex, don't get me wrong. I understand kind of what you're saying. It's kind of like they get to the biggest moments and then, you know, have something weird happen and you lose it. You know, we all saw the Whirlpool Masters. We all saw Shane and Alex for the Moscone Cup, and we all saw when it was Hill and he tried to remove the match rack, and you know, we saw all these weird things that happened to him, but they happen all the time, right? Which makes it worse, but the idea is we see him there all the time having these weird things happen. And Gomez, we saw him in the world nine ball championships, and then we haven't seen him for 13 years since in something like this. But I get what you're saying.
It feels like, you know, Darren went through a phase where he just won everything. And Jason went through a phase where he won everything. And
Mika
when
and
that
Shane
was going
did the same
on, right,
prior.
When that was going on, they were the top of the game. Kazakis had a phase where he was just in the finals everywhere, but not, you know, not getting over the hump. So that's why it strikes me like that.
And to be honest with you, if we were going to ask a question, would we be looking at Alexander Kazakis in the same light as Joshua Filler if he beat
David Al-Qaidi and beat Shane in the Moscone Cup, would we?
Exactly.
We might be looking at him at this. We might be looking ahead of him and Josh and Fedor and even Jason in the same light at that point in time. Because then he'd have the resume. He'd have a Kremlin Cup. He'd have a Moscone Cup win in the biggest moment. He'd have a World Pool Masters. The only thing he wouldn't have is a World Championship or like a U.S. Open or something like that. But, you know, he's a couple of games away from probably being in that category.
And his play up until the finals is just, it's lights out. I mean, he has the ability. There's no question.
And even in the finals, usually it's up until the last few moments that something weird happens. And it's, you know, I still to this day will defend him on that nine ball. I don't know if he has to play the safety, but if he decides in the moment that that's the best shot for him in the Whirlpool Masters, I think that's the right shot. I think he left David super, super tough, and David's not going to make that shot more than 40% of the time, I don't think. But in fact, I think that's high.
You know, from somebody who's been there, David did what he had to do. It came down to one shot. You know, it's that old question, if you're putting a team together and you got to find the one guy who's going to make that one shot, when it was time, David made that shot, and he won the event. He deserved it.
Yep. Nope, I agree. But, yeah, I would say with Eklatı Kaçı, I mean, who would you rather play in the quarterfinals, you know, of the names that I said, Kazakis, Al-Qaidi, and this is, of course, assuming no big upsets, Fedor and Max Leshner, Joshua and Alvin. The only person on the bottom side of the bracket that you would potentially pick is Max. In the quarterfinals, you do not want to be playing Alvin, Joshua, or Fedor. We could all agree on that. Or Shane. Fedor or Shane, whatever it is. But, you know, you can make an argument for wanting to play David, Alex Kazakis, or Jason Shaw. And not only does he have to play them in the quarters, he's going to have to play one of the other ones in the semis. So I just think if you look at Eklatı Kaçı's, as far as the top players, and I'm considering Eklatı Kaçı a top player in the world, I think that he has the easiest draw to get there because I think he only has to play against one top player in the world, being Jason Shaw, and he's not playing as much as, you know, he has been in the past. So that's my pick, I guess, is Eklatı. And you have Joshua Filler. So,
yeah.
Let's move on from this unless there's anything else you want to talk about for this. Perfect. Okay, so then let's see here. Let's move on to the last thing that we're going to talk about. And you love this about as much as you love making head love to a wood chipper, we'll say. We're going to talk about one pocket.
Ooh,
and that's
favorite.
because we have probably had this matchup has probably been about a year and a half to 4 years in the making. Tony versus Chip finally playing even, finally playing a long race for a lot of money. What do you think?
I don't understand, and this, pardon my ignorance. You know, we talked about Efren and how Efren continues to pull magic out of the hat, and his career has lasted so long. It's felt like his best game has been one pocket. And so there's a point that I'm trying to get to here. So Efren, you know, when his other games were starting to weaken, his nine ball game, whatever else, his one pocket game stayed maybe the strongest. I don't understand how a Tony Chohan or a Scott Frost, you can't really say Alex Pagulayan, but, you know, Tony was one of the top three one-pocket players alive. I mean, I don't think any one-pocket fan could argue that a couple of years ago he was one of the top three alive. Has his game weakened, or is Chip just that strong?
Well, that's the discussion, right? I mean, Chip, and I would argue that Tony, even to this day, is not a top three player because I still think that Boosty is. I think Dennis Boosty and, Alex. I still think Boosty, maybe you can argue. But the last time I saw Boosty play, I mean, he was winning the Buffaloes last year, I think. I mean, Boosty in the big matchups, I mean, he gets there. He gets –
strong. But that'd be a great matchup. I'd love to watch Tony and Boosty. I wouldn't know who to bet on. I don't think this has anything to do with Tony, because I think at the last we saw, Tony was playing some really, really strong pool, probably the strongest pool of his life outside of one pocket. We're talking like rotation. I mean, he was playing some really strong nine ball the last time we saw pre-COVID. So the question becomes, well, then if it's not Tony, it's got to be Chip, right? And I guess I'll start with this, because we're going to basically get to my reasoning as to why I'm picking where I'm picking. We watched Tony play Scott, and he won. And then we watched him play Gomez twice, and he won. And then we watched him play Tony, and he won. And of course, along the way, nobody's going to argue Roberto Gomez is on the same level as Tony, although I think it's close-ish. Scott is not on the same level as Tony, but he's close-ish. And along the way, I've bet against Chip every single time. I bet against Chip with Scott. So I made some money off of that. But then I lost money off of him playing Gomez. And then I lost money on him playing Gomez the second time. And then I lost money playing against Tony. And what I'm finding out is Chip has this magical way of like reviving the American hustle. Right? He has this way of making people think that he can't win. But then he just wins, right? He just wins, and he wins in unspectacular fashion. He grinds you down into the dirt, and he just finds a way to win every single time. I mean, it's not entertaining pool. In fact, I'd rather gouge my eyes out with acid than watch him play hit Roberto Gomez again. That was awful. It was terrible pool to watch. But the dude just wins. I'm done betting against him. Chip is the best American pool player, or the best American one pocket player the U.S. has to offer. He's going to win this matchup, and it's just because I'm sick of losing money against him. Chip's going to win this matchup, and we're going to have another discussion later on down the road as to whether or not Chip is in the discussion or getting into the discussion of being in the Dennis, Alex, Robert, Bustamante type of category as some of the best one pocket players in the world. That's my prediction. I think Chip wins this and moves on to the next round of players.
And who's doing the stream?
This is being done by Omega Billiards. In fact, okay. They just opened up their own their new streaming channel. It's called what is it called? Omega. Oh, I should know this. Omega Streams, I think, is what it is. Omega Stream. I want to say it's Omega Stream.
Okay.
Let me find out. Mike Hong is and I'm pronouncing that wrong, but I want to say that he actually started his own streaming company to do all of these events, which I think is a great idea for him, because he stops using other people's platforms, and that's just straight profit for him.
And, we made the comment that other people have to step up and start putting things together, and I realize that Mike's not putting together a World Cup of Pool or World Pool Masters, but Mike has got this challenge match thing down.
Omega Billiards TV is the name of it. Billiards TV. Yep.
Okay. And that starts tomorrow.
That starts tomorrow. Yeah. This starts tomorrow. Get yourself the, in fact, I can put this out there in the comments as to where you can get the stream. I believe this is where.
9 each day. So you figure what? Each day is going to get 13, 14 games? With the possibility of the last
15, really I would say, long. I would, to be honest, I would say 15 to 17.
What's the over under time wise each day? 15 games?
Chip's a slow player. I mean, I'm not sure if you're saying this is going to be long or if this is going to be short, but I mean, Chip's a slow player.
Really long. I think it could be crazy long.
It'll probably be between 7 and 9 hours, I would guess.
Oh, I think you're over on, I think it will be over that. Every day.
Mm. Chip's a slow player, but Tony's not. I mean, Tony will open up some racks and sell out, and he'll open up some racks and run out. There'll be some drag out games too. Don't get me wrong, but there's going to be a lot of there'll be probably 6 or 7 games that last less than 20 minutes probably.
Okay.
Just my guess.
Okay. And I was saying, you know, just because I live in Arizona doesn't mean I know one button.
Yeah, and I'll throw out there the link in case you wanted to buy the stream.
Okay. Oh, hey, we've got, when we get done talking about Tony and Chip, I've got something to mention.
Okay, well, tell me what you think's going to happen, and then you can go ahead.
Well, you're picking Chip, so I'll pick Tony. And again, I don't know One Pocket. I don't watch it very much. I don't enjoy watching it. You know, like I'd said a couple weeks ago, I really did enjoy this local match with Chris Adams and Avery Reese. That was a great match, partly because of commentary. Scott and George Teixeira really did a nice job on that. I'm just going by reputation here. And I'll try to watch part of this just because I want to see. I want to understand where Chip's coming from. You know, because he's not a name that I'm super familiar with. You know, don't get me wrong. I enter payouts for all these events, so I see when he's cashing in events. But he's just not an upper echelon nine ball player. So I want to see what the difference is. You know, when Scott was ruling the world in One Pocket, he also played nine ball really, really well. You know, Tony Chohan plays nine ball really well. So I want to see what the difference is, and maybe I'll be a little more informed.
We'll find out.
Okay.
All right. So what's your news? What you got for us?
So Arizona State Billiard Hall of Fame.
Ooh, talk about it.
We have a new president.
Is it you?
Yeah. Really, and it was – Scott didn't have the time. You know, he's gotten involved in so much stuff. He didn't feel that he was able to dedicate the right amount of time to it. And it came down to, you know, who really wanted to – I mean, you guys have – you guys know what it is. You know, you know the Hall of Fame, and you know the feeling, you know, how strongly you have to feel about that sort of thing to try to make it a success. And
it takes some time, man.
Yeah. I talked to John, and, you know, before I made the decision, I spent about an hour on the phone with him, and I said, you know, you've got a board of directors. You know, how much work do you really do? He said, oh, about 95% of it. I said, no, that didn't help the decision. But, you know,
that might be low, too.
I believe in the project, and that's the important thing. So I want to see the project succeed. And fortunately, I have a good board, and I'm not going to do 95% of the work. I think.
You hope. Well, if I get to the point where you stop responding to me when I can't even say that you barely ever respond now as is. All right, never mind. Hey, well, congratulations. I mean, that's really exciting, and I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, it's hard to make a list of the most influential people in the industry of the last 30 years without having you on it already. So you're just adding to that resume. It's pretty impressive.
I appreciate that. You know, on a much, much sadder note before we end things, you know, something's got to be said about Tony Anagoni.
Go ahead.
You know, I had experience with Tony when I first got started with AZ. We were doing online. Well, I was doing online brackets. I went out to Reno. Those were some of the biggest tournaments that I had done online brackets for. But that was where I met Tony. And he had a ton of energy, and he had a ton of ideas, and I understand that he had some issues, and he handled some things poorly, but I also know of tournament promoters who have been in similar situations, who have handled them just as poorly, and who were able to come out of it without taking the hit that Tony did. And the thing that keeps jumping out at me, and for anybody who's not aware of what happened, Tony was a tournament promoter. He was He was the subject of playing off the rail. He killed himself last week. And the thing that keeps jumping out at me is you think about how you feel about pool and how strongly you feel about what you can accomplish within the game. And you want to do it for the game. I mean, neither you or I are in this for our egos. You know, we do it because we love the game of pool and we have these ideas and we think that we can accomplish things. And Tony was that exact same thing. He had the ideas and he had the energy and he really thought he was going to make his mark on the game of pool. And to think that he struggled enough that energy and those plans took him to the point where he felt it was best to take his life. I mean, could you imagine how you must feel to have someone come to you and say, hey, Nate, you know, everything that you have done and everything that you plan on doing, it's going to amount to nothing. I mean, I just can't imagine the despair that somebody had to be going through. And don't get me, look, I struggle with depression all the time. I get it. I don't struggle with it at that level, but I'm just blown away. It's really hard to wrap my head around. I mean, there's a lot I still want to accomplish in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly, man. I've been kind of on a Facebook hiatus, so actually this is the first time I've heard about this.
He jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, geez. Yikes.
And the forums are full of people. And, you know, there's been a couple of idiots who felt that it was the proper time to chime in and remind people of
how smart
the issues that he had in the past. Yeah. But, you know, it's mostly people saying, hey, I knew Tony, and Tony was a great guy, and giving him the credit for what he had accomplished. I mean, he had his faults, don't get me wrong. But, you know, nobody deserves to have that kind of despair in their minds, and certainly not, I mean, look, that kind of despair takes priority over pool. But, you know, I just keep seeing it through the lens of this is somebody who wanted to accomplish something in pool. And apparently felt that he was never going to. You know, because when you or I run out of energy, we sometimes have to look at it and say, no, you know, I might not feel like doing a podcast. I might not feel like, putting together that next event, but I'm doing something positive for the game and I'm accomplishing something, and that's going to drive me to keep doing it. You know, go back to Helena. You know, Helena was in the same boat. On one hand, I wish that we were able to be more open about mental health issues, which I know is happening more and more in media. But God, just to think that somebody who had that kind of energy and that kind of drive, that you or I could have had conversations with for hours about the things that we wanted to do with the game and just decided I'm never going to do it and I'm done. All right, I'm done. That was me on my soapbox.
No, it's well said. It's I think Carly McGee is just so sad. I mean, you hope that if you're in that point in your life that you have somebody that you can reach out to and that you can get help from, whether it's, you know, somebody, a friend, whether it's a trained professional, whether it's some person that you barely know. I mean, you hope that in the moment of your worst that you have somebody that you can reach out to. And, you know, sometimes it's best that if you haven't heard from somebody, one of your good friends for a while, maybe it's not the worst idea to reach out to them and say, hey, you know, how are you doing? I haven't heard from you for a while. Is everything okay? And, you know, you never really know where somebody's at. And if they feel okay reaching out and you're getting the help that they need in the moment, it's a sad moment. So I thank you for sharing that, and sorry for your loss. And it's
Well, it's the game's loss. And that's just a smaller, you know, you think about his family and his friends, but, you know, for all of us, for the game itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I hate to end on a note like that, but I think that's probably the best place to leave it at this point. What do you think?
Do we have an update before we get off on?
We do. Well, we certainly can. Let's. Do you have it up right there?
I do. Denmark 4-3 over Germany.
Well, there you go.
So
they're almost to the halfway point. I'm going to join you. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in this week. We're going to be doing these every week now. We're going to get a little bit more structured with when we get these things done. And this is going to be a regular weekly thing. So thank you very much for tuning in, whether it was for the whole thing or whether it was just part of it. And please share this when you see them, if you would. Help us grow. We're trying to be a little bit bigger media influencers in the industry. And I think we owe that to Matchroom, who is doing so much work into growing this industry that we all kind of need to jump on board and become more of a media conglomerate. I would say maybe that's a word that we can use here, so that we can actually try to help Matchroom grow by doing our part in the industry. So help us out by just please sharing the stream when you see them. And there are other ways to do so if you would like, but if you're really interested in getting in there and helping us out with the show, please reach out to me privately, and we can get you some things that you can do to help us out even more. But the easiest and simplest thing is just please share the streams when you see them. Mike, anything else in closing to get us out of here with?
Nope. Go Darren. Go Carl.
All right. I agree with that. And till next time, thank you everybody for tuning in. Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.